Welcome to the summary COP26 podcast, and welcome to 2022. The timing of this summary is due to a post-COP event that I had wanted to attend before reporting back to UKLA members, but it also serves as a useful transition from the COP podcast to the regular podcast. COP26 was a place to establish common goals and partnerships, but the work actually starts now. And similarly, but with far less ambition, the UKLA podcast will now be brought to you regularly on a bi-weekly basis. Now, I'll have to see how well that goes during a multi-week trial or inquiry, but we're going to give it our best shot. The aim of the podcast is to showcase UKLA members in all their glory. So many members are doing so many interesting things, and there will be special guests from time to time when the interest factor warrants it. I suspect it's also going to serve as UKLA newsletter of sorts, because UKLA does so much and often it's quite hard to keep up with everything. And finally, thank you very much to Number 5 Chambers for donating funds for podcasting services, a professional sound engineer, and for designing a tasteful logo. Now, about the COP. It's taken a very long time for my feelings about it to settle. Did it achieve what it had to? Yes, although no one was perfectly happy. No one was ever going to be perfectly happy, though. I've not been involved with the COP circus for a long time, so it was a real shock to return to feel like the world had totally changed. There was such a sense of momentum. Although most NGOs have dismissed the entire thing as a PR stunt, I totally disagree. A lot was actually achieved. I do, however, agree in that as a lawyer, I look for accountability and enforcement mechanisms. And while there was great progress on developing those, we aren't there yet. This means the electorate and the media predominantly are needed to hold politicians to account for their pledges and to carefully scrutinize claims to be meeting them. And the courts will continue to have a role. A perfect example of this is the legal challenge lodged today by Friends of the Earth and Client Earth concerning the government's net zero strategy, something to keep our eyes on. One of the things that doesn't tend to feature in conversations about success and failure of COP is the opportunity for connections to be made that will lead to future collaborations. A lot of people question whether it was wise to have some 25,000 people gathering in one place when COVID remained a real risk. And I do not think this is the product of happy hindsight just because I happened to not catch COP COVID. Thank you very much, vaccines. But having this in person was, in my view, essential. That aspect, for those of us at least who were vaccinated and could attend the entire two-week period, worked. Every single day, I overheard conversations on future work being planned between people who met at COP, often just because they happened to sit next to each other on the train. And that is a huge part of COPs. I shared my Airbnb this time with a dear friend I met at a previous COP. But that all said, I've never, and no one at this COP had ever, been to a COP that felt as electric as this one. As I said, the sense of momentum and change was really infectious and overwhelming. Even the COP regulars were shocked at how fast everything is changing. Patricia Espinoza, who is the head of the UNFCCC, said that if you'd asked her 3 years ago whether net zero would have gotten to where it is now, she said she would never have believed you. And until this COP, I never, ever would have thought that the goal of limiting warming to 1.5 degrees would have gained the traction that it has. Now that looks possible, albeit with big effort. It is amazing that we've gone from aiming for 2 degrees in Paris to the universal acknowledgement that 1.5 degrees is the target we're aiming for today. Although I have to say, a note of caution is warranted there, because all of the models that I've seen showing a 1.5 degree pathway, they all use magical thinking around 2050. In other words, none of them work using present technology without something somehow, somewhere, sucking huge quantities of greenhouse gases from the atmosphere. So that's the long-term problematic and pessimistic picture. One aspect which does allow me to hold some hope, though, is that we aren't talking about tinkering with something bit by bit. The issue requires a total systems change, and that sort of thing is highly unpredictable. And so often all it takes is a trigger point to be reached, some sort of critical mass, and then the rest falls into place. Of course, that's for good or ill, because trigger points are one of the main terrors inherent in the model's assumption of error for uncertainty. That, though, is the long-term view. Turning to the short-term, in the first podcast, I set out a shopping list of what we need this COP to deliver. Were all of the items ticked off? Let's go through them. First, I said that the world had to establish a committed path to global net zero by 2050. We are so much closer. Of course, the commitments have to be delivered. That's the tricky bit. And citizens have to hold their nations to account here. But it is really positive to have secured a commitment to review these pledges next year at COP27, rather than the previous framework, which allowed for that only to be revisited in 5 years. Frankly, in 5 years would have been far too late. Secondly, there needed to be an agreement on public climate finance. The money given by rich nations to support developing countries in lowering carbon emissions and adapting to climate impacts. Now, the announcements confirmed that this has been mostly secured, although there's been some hilarious post-COP confessions that actors signed up to pledges they didn't actually mean to. But overall, a lot of money was pledged by committed actors. So yes, I say there was agreement on the need for public finance. And yes, quite a few of the necessary mechanisms were put in place at COP, certainly the front runners, which will serve as models to follow. Not all of it's been secured in the form of grants. That was never going to happen. But the huge mobilization of private capital is going to make up for that, provided, of course, public money comes alongside to de-risk that investment. That is critical. Thirdly, compensation for loss and damage. Right, this was, as expected, by far the most difficult conversation at COP. And there are still a lot of bad feelings after that session. Some money will be heading towards more vulnerable nations, not in the form they wish, not when they wish, not where they wish. So I have to say loss and damage has been left as a relatively open sore to be revisited next year, and I fear year after year. But the conversation was had, so perhaps a start was made. I think that's the best that can be said there. Fourthly, there was the necessary rebalancing of funding for mitigation and adaptation in line with Article 9.4 of the Paris Agreement, so that's great. Fifthly, we do have more clarity on adaptation and the ways by which we will measure progress towards that goal, also great. And sixthly and finally, the Article 6 framework is there. Now, it's controversial, but the ideal solution, which is frankly a straightforward, simple carbon tax, would only have been agreed globally well after climate change had submerged the small island states. So the less perfect but doable solutions do have to be considered wins here. One thing to add, which I did not expect, was the extremely welcome initiative to establish common global standards to tackle rampant greenwashing. That is a really positive outcome of COP26 that will lead to big, big changes globally. So overall, COP26 did what it really had to do. It did leave some for later, and so the hard work must continue. After spending 2 weeks with the people at the vanguard of this work, I do feel good about it. It was so obvious that the smartest people in the world are working on this problem. And of course, there were a fair few charlatans there as well, and that does include a lot of the smart folk who didn't get that they were actually charlatans. But who knows? Today's charlatan may well be tomorrow's successful visionary. We can all keep our fingers crossed for that. Thank you ever so much for listening, and the next podcast will be posted by January 28th.